So, Mary, what do you think now should happen with the remains of Mungo Man and also Mungo Lady at Mungo National Park?
Well, we do have a committee. We have the three tribal groups involved there, so it's not a decision of what I make. It's what the other tribal groups will make that decision when the time is right. Myself, I would like to see them laid back to rest. But the importance of those very famous two goes beyond what I want. So they gave Aboriginal Australia a voice in their recognition and in their culture and in their heritage. And I think there needs to be a better understanding of Aboriginal people coming from white Australia, so that they would at least take on board the messages why they came up in the first place, is to care for country and care for it in a meaningful way, so that people can survive in a landscape if they look after it. I mean, my people were the best preservers of all when it came to surviving in a landscape, but looking after that land. There's a lesson to be learnt there to how they went about doing things. It might have been a slow way of life, but it was a life that my people were able to survive for 60,000 years. So, you know, Mungo Man and Mungo Lady have been laid to rest many thousands of years ago. They knew the struggle that our people were in, so that's why they came back up. They did their job in letting Australia know that when we said that we was here for the dream time, that's what it was all about, many thousands of years. We've proved that. But I think it's finally to let them rest is another thing, because they've done their job as far as I'm concerned. I don't think there's much more that they can tell the scientific world. There is yet to be other discoveries out in that landscape where they were, and I should think that there's more exciting things to come. I know it's a big learning place out there for future generations, and if they can preserve and look after that landscape, and in turn let young people study there and learn from it. I'll have to stop.
So you were just telling me a little while ago a story about your great-grandfather and the way he travelled around the country.
It was my grandfather, not my great-grandfather. He travelled around the country, but he had the dog tag, so he was able to move in and out and work all around up near Cobar, Hillston, Ivanhoe, Wookang, wherever he went, with, because he was a drover. But before he became a drover, he was living in a place where he was brought up over in Moonacolla Mission. He went from there, and he was out at Waldera Station. He was head stockman out there on that Waldera Station too before he took sheep away. My father, his son, he did droving as well, but my dad didn't need the dog tag. I don't know why, because he had a good boss that looked after him. The thing is, with Aboriginal people, wherever they moved throughout the country, they were watched, and they knew where they were going and what they were going to do, because you had these stock and station agents and you had other landowners where exactly where they were going and where they were taking the sheep. So,
and what did the dog tag actually, can you describe it, what the dog tag was?
It meant that he could move in and out towns and didn't have to be locked up on a mission or in jail.
And it was a government...
It was a government protection act. And
so it was like a licence. You had to have this licence.
He had that licence to move around. My other old grandfather, Pierce, when he come out of country and he worked and lived along the Murray River there, right down to Ballarandle to the Murrumbidgee, where he met my grandmother, he came and he came from South Australia, so he had a message stick where he could travel through country, right down and cross the river. He didn't have the dog tag, but he had the message stick to travel through Aboriginal country.
And so had
the dog tag to move in and out around.
For government purposes.
For government purposes, for the landowner purpose, travelling around. But the other old fella, he was an old full-blood fella, see that old fella there, and he had the markings. So he had the right of way with his message stick, like a passport, that message stick is, to get through country to go and work. So...
And would he show that message stick when he went to different country?
Only to black fellas. He never showed it to no white man because a white man wouldn't have known what that was. And of course, if you do the right thing along the rivers, back in, 1919 or whatever, and you was just another black fella on the river thing, but he was a fisherman, so he sold to the pedal boats. He caught fish and, looked after his family that were in a camp probably over there somewhere, so that they could survive. But when he got to Ballarandle, he did odd jobs around Ballarandle, but he also got the Catholic priest, I think his name was Father Killian, and he wrote, Father Killian and Grandfather Pierce wrote a letter to the Queen asking that they'd be accepted into, my mum and them when they was little, be accepted into the Catholic school, because black kids weren't allowed to go to school then. They weren't allowed to go to the public school and they weren't allowed to go. I think they had a little school down on the mission. So, because my mum wasn't brought up on the mission, she was brought at the depot or on the island where they lived. Even though the police knew where they were, they didn't wander away. But he did want his children to be educated. And so Father Killian and him went and wrote that letter and got that mission ground today. And it's always been known as a mission where a Catholic church was actually built on that mission. But then the evangelists and those type of people come along and they did Sunday school and preaching there. They put a mission manager there, and she was one of those Holy Joes. So, we didn't go to the Sunday school there. We weren't allowed to go there to that. But she kept strict order of the black fellows she did have on there, and a lot of them were my cousins and mum's first cousins and uncles and aunties were there.
And what was that school called again?
That school on the mission, I don't know.
So, but where did your grandfather had to work with the priest to get permission, and they had to write a letter to the Queen, did you say?
Yeah, he wrote a letter to the Queen.
To go to which school?
Yeah, well, grandfather couldn't, to let Aboriginal kids in the Catholic school.
Oh, right.
But also to get that church on the mission for them.
Oh, I see.
Before it was a mission. I don't know. I don't know the history of it. I've heard people talking about it. Mum said it many times. But she said that church wouldn't be down if it wasn't for Grandfather Pierce, because he with Father Killian. I think there's been some research from my brothers or sisters to find that out.
And getting back to the message sticks, you actually saw that message.
I did. I got into his little suitcase like that, and he had his catechu ointment in there, and he had his jars of ointments that he used to rub on his hand. Could have been emu fat or anything. I don't know what it was, but he did have these sticks rolled up in an old cloth, and there was three of them there. And they had the beautiful markings on them. And I said, "Grandpa, what's this here?" He said, "You put that away, my girl. That is not for you." He said, "That's my message stick." But them black fellas and featherfoot fellas used to come, and they would, I reckon they would have had to either take a message back or bring a message to him. So that was like having a passport, really, and only certain people in the tribe would know what their messages were or when he got them. It was just to let them know where people were going to be camping, because there might have been a big corroboree, or there might have been a death there and he might have had to come for a funeral. But Grandfather never left. He went around the districts. He went as far as Mildura and then Robin Vale and Ballarannel. He never moved out of those areas. He could have went to Swan Hill for a while too, but mainly with his family and his in-laws. Mum and Dad always stayed with, you know, around the...
Very family-oriented.
Yeah, they were, and very strict with where they went and who they mixed with too, because... They weren't drinkers or anything like that, so, you know.
Great story. And is there anything else you'd like to say just to finish off this wonderful sharing of your life stories?
The grandfathers were the best things that I ever had in my life, to be privileged to see them. Even though they were old people, to know them and how kind they were. And my mum and dad were exactly the same, and so were my aunties and uncles. From both sides of family, they were very, very kind people. They weren't flash. They never tried to make out that they were somebody that they weren't. They were just natural, kind people that shared whatever they had with other family groups if need be, but always being mindful of people's property and respect other people, no matter who they were. Always had that respect for other people. So it was like Grandfather Pierce and Grandfather Kelly were like guardian angels over us younger ones when we were small, because I never heard them swear. They never ever hit us. You know, if we were told to go away, if big people were talking, they told us very kindly. They never, you know, never was nasty to us. There was Mum and Dad. Oh, geez. And my brothers and sisters were exactly the same. Always treated the family groups as they come down the line with respect. And
your mum, Alice Kelly, she was representing the Mutty Mutty people from your family.
Yep, into the World Heritage Area, yep.
What was the connection with Mutty Mutty and you and your family?
Well, her mother was born at Paker Creek, and from what I understand, the Mutty Mutty people went as far as the shores of Lake Mungo, and we never went over the other side of the Willandra Creek. So She was told that by her old aunties, and by old Bushy Kirby, who was her uncle, who lived out at Lake Angelica. He actually had photos of grandmother.
So it was nursing on her mum's side of the family.
Yeah, he actually had photos of grandmother nursing mum when mum was a little tacker. And he only come back to Balranal occasionally for funerals or something like that. And him and mum always spoke. She used to write to him. So, you know, her knowledge of the ways of her people was taken on board to what they had to say, whereas other ones in the family never asked those questions or never took any notice to what was being said by the old people, because drink had got into the communities by then, and other people come to live in them communities. So, you know, this breaking up of the family groups and pushing them around to other missions and marrying into and living there or living there never give them the opportunity to be together. And so whenever the opportunity come for the old uncle to come back or the old auntie that lived, you know, down the mission, they always, she always spoke to them. And then when Mungo was getting made into a national park, she consulted with many of her sisters and her brothers and her people to let them know what was going on, but she couldn't get them to come with her, because they didn't want to leave their jobs if they were fruit pickers or they were travelling through or going somewhere. And I often used to hear them, the old brothers, say to her brothers, "Oh, Ellie, you do it, because, you know, we've got to go up here, we've got to start the cherries, or we've got to start the peas or whatever, or we're doing the grapes." And, you know, they just travelling around with their own family groups to survive as well. But she was the one that had the opportunity to be in one place. She never moved to another town to live. She always lived in Balranal. And so she was the main support to her mobs going in and out and around, to always come and consult with her too and talk things over with her. So she was the stable one that didn't have to go, because Dad had done a good job, you see.
So she made it happen.
She made it happen because she didn't hesitate to ask advice by the Aboriginal people as well when it come to sacred things.
Great. Well, thank you, Mary, very much for taking so much time to share your story and for it to be now a very precious part of the New South Wales State Library's oral history collection.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm very happy to tell a story that's going to educate our younger generations. It's a privilege.